Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Let me leave you with this. And I believe these words came from the Pokemon movie. The media pointed that out. Life can be a challenge. Life can seem impossible. It's never easy when there's so much on the line. But you and I can make a difference.
So it's come to this in the Republican primary race Herman Cain. And yes, he said the media pointed that out. The fact that he was previously citing a poet who said those inspirational words, and it turned out to be from the Pokemon movie. Jon Stewart was brutal on that. Have you seen that? But the game of musical chairs to be the not Romney when the music stops in Iowa and New Hampshire is being led now by former Speaker of the House Newt Gingrich. And the media are having lots of fun with 30 years of Newt baggage to say, ha, 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 this will never work. Well, media, maybe not so fast. Not that there isn't baggage to check. Before the news, for example, we played a short bite from a spot Gingrich made in 2007 with another Speaker of the House, none other than Nancy Pelosi, to jointly endorse the need for fighting climate change, believe it or not. Here, because I know you're curious, is the full 30-second spot.
Hi, I'm Nancy Pelosi, lifelong Democrat and Speaker of the House.
And I'm Newt Gingrich, lifelong Republican, and I used to be Speaker.
We don't always see eye to eye, do we, Newt?
No, but we do agree our country must take action to address climate change.
We need cleaner forms of energy, and we need them fast.
If enough of us demand action from our leaders, we can spark the innovation we need.
Go to WeCanSolveIt.org. Together, we can do this.
Newt and Nancy sitting on a love seat together, no less, on tape in 2007 for doing something about climate change. Maybe not the best way to advertise yourself to Republican primary voters for whom Pelosi is the Wicked Witch of the West. So when this came up Saturday night on the Mike Huckabee Fox News Channel Candidates Forum, Gingrich said this about that moment.
First of all, it's probably the dumbest single thing I've done in research. It is inexplicable.
Were you being held hostage?
No, just dumb. I was trying to do something I failed to do. Because I do think it's important for conservatives to be in the middle of the debate over the environment. Let me say, first of all, this will probably get me into some interesting arguments. I actually don't know where the global warming is occurring. The vast majority of the National Academy of Science says it is. A minority says it is not.
So Gingrich's latest position on global warming, he doesn't know if it's occurring, from Saturday night's Huckabee Fox Forum. Newt saying the Pelosi video was the dumbest single thing he's done in the last few years. But like many other conservatives, he had also previously endorsed a cap-and-trade system to fight global warming. He told PBS Frontline in 2007, I think if you have mandatory carbon caps combined with a trading system, much like we did with sulfur, and if you have a tax incentive program for investing in the solutions, that there's a package that's very, very good, and frankly, it's something I would strongly support. Unquote. I guess that's when conservatives used to call cap-and-trade a market solution. Now it's a job-killing tax. One more before we get to our guests, Matt Towery and Eleanor Cliff, to talk about the Gingrich campaign and some of the history. In this video, Gingrich endorses the idea of an individual mandate for health insurance, which, like Mitt Romney, he was in favor of before the party decided to claim that it's Stalinist and unconstitutional. This is Newt Gingrich in 2005. Listen carefully. This is not great audio, but it's worth it.
But my point to conservatives is it's a matter of responsibility. Well, if I see somebody who's earning over $50,000 a year, who has made the calculated decision not to buy health insurance, I'm looking at somebody who is absolutely as irresponsible as anybody who was ever on welfare. Because what they've said is, A, I'm gambling that I won't get sick, and B, I'm gambling that if I do get sick, I can cheat all my neighbors. Now, when you talk to hospitals, a very significant part of their non-collectibles are people who have money, but who've calculated that it's not worth the cost to collect it. And so I'm actually in favor of finding a way to say, if you're above whatever the appropriate income level is, you ought to either have health insurance or you ought to post a bond.
So Gingrich in 2005 endorsing the individual mandate for health insurance. So can he be the not Romney who actually beats Romney when the conservative doubters begin to vote next month? Let's ask Matt Towery, pollster and columnist based in Georgia, longtime friend of Newt Gingrich and former campaign manager, and the author of the book Paranoid Nation, The Real Story of the 2008 Fight for the Presidency, and Eleanor Clift, contributing editor for Newsweek magazine and longtime liberal voice on the McLaughlin Group. Eleanor, welcome back. Matt, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you. Well, first I have to say hey to Eleanor because she was a superstar in my book.
Really?
Yes. I wrote a book called Power Chicks, How Women Would Dominate America. And I don't know if you're there yet or not, Eleanor, but I think you are. And it went to number one on Amazon.
That was back in the 90s. You wrote that book that you called Power Chicks, right?
Yeah, right.
Well, Matt, do the clips that we played just now matter to the Republican primary electorate? I don't care so much whether they matter to Eleanor Clift and her fans. Pro-cap and trade, pro-individual mandate, on the love seat with Nancy Pelosi saying climate change is real, all on YouTube for all the world to see. Does this matter to Iowa and New Hampshire Republicans?
Well, you know, the YouTube thing was stupid. That was just plain dumb. Newt was, I think, probably in a time period when he wanted to raise his awareness and his, show that he could be
relevant.
Relevant and bipartisan. And so from a political perspective, no, that wasn't a good idea. I think he said that. As far as the other things go, right now the GOP is sort of down to a very small group of individuals who can run for president, and Newt is the smartest. He is the strongest of them all. I think Eleanor would agree that he is a very strong, tough man.
Well, is that my invitation?
I guess so, Eleanor. Go ahead, but I do want you to address specifically whether he can become the not Romney for conservatives in the Republican primaries with all those past Romney-like positions,
right.
Individual mandate, cap and trade.
I think he's already the not Romney because everybody else has fallen away, and he himself said the race is no longer who's going to be the not Romney, it's going to be who's the not Newt, which is sort of his grandiosity, I think, coming to the fore. But I would argue that he, over his long career, has always sought conservative solutions to problems. And when he did the spot with Nancy Pelosi, politics aside, he does recognize that global warming is a real threat and that it's,
but wait a minute,
it's a
does
phenomenon
he?
That is man-made.
So what do you make of what he said in the clip from this Saturday night responding to the Newt Pelosi spot where he said he doesn't know if it's real? Is that a chain, a flip-flop?
He's playing to where his party is, and he has flip-flopped, if you want to use that word, as many times as Mitt Romney. But I think people look at him and he's not a manufactured soundbite. I mean, he invents them on the spot. You get the feeling that there's some real thought behind most of the positions that he takes. It's not just for political expediency. And you know, if you look at politicians and hold them to every position they took 20 years ago, 15 years ago, I mean, that's kind of absurd. So I think he's the one to make that case. And so far, he looks better able than any of the other candidates at consolidating the conservative base within a party that has gotten dramatically more conservative even in the last 4 years. And if he can do that, you know, he might be in a position to win the nomination. I think it's far-fetched to think that he could win a national election in this country.
Well, we'll get to the general in a few minutes. But, Matt, to digress just a minute,
yes,
from the candidate to those positions,
yes,
and I was a little bit flip about it in the introduction, but
sure,
cap and trade and individual mandate, weren't they considered conservative think tank market reforms until Obama embraced them, and then they turned into unconstitutional and literally Stalinist, this is what the talk show hosts say, communist, Soviet, command and control economy, the individual mandate telling you what you have to buy. Will you acknowledge that that's the history of these policies?
Well, I acknowledge that that's the history of the policy itself, but not the implementation of the policy. I don't believe, and I didn't keep up with all these crazy ideas in the last 10 years because I've had a business to run, so I didn't always listen to every word he said.
You were with his campaigns earlier than that.
I was his chairman back when he was speaker, yes. And yes. After that, I had to build my own company, and in fact, I employed him for a period of time. That was a lovely experience.
What do you mean by that, in that tone of voice?
Well, because he didn't do anything.
What do you mean?
I couldn't get him to do anything. I couldn't figure it. He would pontificate and eat and do all these other stuff and come to meetings, and people loved being around him, but I couldn't get Newt to figure out what we were going to do.
A lot of people pay him a lot of money to do exactly that. What else were you trying to get him to do?
I was trying to get him to work, actually. So, you know, that didn't work out, but I did. I wouldn't mind.
Do what? What was the job?
Well, the job, if you really want to know, we were building a web company, Insider Advantage, which is now a polling firm. We wanted it. It was right when the web was about to explode, and we were trying to get some things done very quickly, meetings done, people to meet, ideas popping so that we would be the hot, hot new thing. We were about 4 or 5 months too late. And to Newt's credit, I'm not putting him down here, he was just, you know, brand new and starting his business. He was not a businessman at that time. And I kid him all the time. I say, you know, I bought you a lot of good meals, but we didn't get much out of it. And
right.
He just laughs about it.
Matt Towery and Eleanor Clift as we talk about the Newt Gingrich campaign. Eleanor, you were really making the argument a minute ago, and I think you made it on the McLaughlin Group yesterday, that these particular turnarounds and some of the things from the recent months of the campaign that didn't look so good for him to one group or another don't really matter that much, largely because of his tone, because he's more pugnacious than Romney, and he has all this history of really bashing liberals and Democrats year after year, and he sounds like he means it even when he changes positions. But there's such a history here, as you well know, because you were reporting on Washington back during the Clinton administration. I'm going to do a very quick list, and you tell me if all of these can go away for the electorate. You might include his massive bill at Tiffany's during hard times for most people, dissing the Paul Ryan health reform plan as right-wing social engineering. Those two things almost made him drop out of the race in the spring. Plus, going back to his days as speaker, he paid a $300,000 fine for misleading the House Ethics Committee about his finances. He hurt the party in the 1998 elections because he went so hard after the Clinton impeachment, while it emerged later that he himself was having an affair, saying Obama's feeling about the United States is more Kenyan than American, his appearing soft in the last debate on illegal immigration. The list could run until Wednesday to inflame, you know, liberals and conservatives alike. I think if he had to pay $15 a piece to check all that baggage, he couldn't afford the flight to Iowa. Does it just not stick, any of it, for some reason?
He has also been the leader of the conservative movement going back more than 20 years. He gave the Republicans their majority in the House, and he brings, you know, passion to what he says, and he, if you see him as the chief alternative to Mitt Romney, who's rather a robotic performer on the campaign trail, and Mitt Romney, although he's been a, you know, registered Republican for all his life, has no, like, street creds within the party or within, certainly within the conservative movement. And so I think, you know, as I look at the primary voters and see them get excited about Newt Gingrich, there are only two reasons. One, they don't remember, or they never, they're too young and they don't know anything about this long list you recited.
Uh-huh.
Or two, they're willing to overlook it because they just see him as an historic figure and he creates excitement and they just would love to see a cage match between him and President
right.
Obama, and they're so confident in Gingrich's intellectual agility that they think that the debates could decide the general election just as they seem to be deciding the primary race.
And as Gingrich is already challenging Obama, if he wins the nomination, to a series of Lincoln-Douglas-style extended debates. But can I linger for a moment, Matt, on the Ethics Committee
yes.
fine,
mm-hmm.
that
sure.
one piece of the history? Can we just pass over as some little nothing from the past being fined $300,000 for the Speaker of the House misleading Congress? Didn't Clinton lose his law license for lying to a court?
Well, yes. I mean, I thought it was the dumbest thing he ever did. I mean, I told him, I said, Newt, I do not like you being at GOPAC. I do not like you being in the Kennesaw State University program. It's not something that we need in order to move forward. But let me just say this about Newt. Newt was truly dedicated, and I think you're hearing this even from Eleanor. And I'm not saying, I don't mean this in a bad way, Eleanor, so please don't get upset. You're hearing from Eleanor. This is a guy who just could not wait to get his ideas out. And however he got his ideas out, if they seemed to be legal or if they had been run by counsel or whatever, then he was off to the races and wanting to do it. And, yeah, you're going to hear about it, but you're also going to hear about the fact that really, yes, there was a fine, but there was no what we would say, Madeline would say, there would be no real criminal desire on Gingrich's part, and I do think the public will let him, you know, sort of slide by. I mean, you got a president right now who's got almost $1 billion to run for office. That's a lot of money. Something's going to go wrong there, too.
Eleanor, anything? Well, let me play.
Well, the thing is, Congress is held in such low regard. Right now, if you say he was reprimanded by the Congress and had to pay a fine, you know, people might shrug. But frankly, he's the only speaker in history to have faced that. It's a terrible blemish. But in the context of today's politics and the fact that Congress is seen as this institution that a lot of certainly Republican primary voters would like to just get rid of, I think that he can get past that.
Well, I'll agree with Eleanor in this sense, because I was good friends with Bill Clinton. And after he was, quote, impeached, which I thought was stupid, and I think Newt thought it was stupid, too. The only reason we were stuck with it was because Henry Hyde finally joined the gang of nuts and said we have to go ahead and impeach the guy. I don't think Newt wanted that thing at all. In fact, I was on the Chris Matthews show the night that they were voting the articles of impeachment, pleading with Republicans to quit this. He was going to be acquitted in the Senate. We all knew that. And the fact of the matter is these guys make these mistakes. And I think what Eleanor's trying to say is in the grand scheme of things, when people don't have food to eat, they don't have clothes, they don't have homes, we're in real trouble. And it's not Barack Obama's trouble. It's not his fault. It's that this country has had a long history of letting things go down the tubes over the last 20
right.
years.
And in that context, who remembers GOPAC?
Exactly.
Matt Towery, former Gingrich campaign manager, Eleanor Cliff from Newsweek on WNYC as we talk about the Gingrich campaign. So let's get to the general election. Who would be better positioned to beat President Obama in the fall, Gingrich or Romney? And here is a take on that question from Democratic Congressman Barney Frank, who announced his retirement last week, retiring but not shy, on ABC This Week.
He would be a very weak candidate. He would lose heavily, and a lot of Democrats would win races in which there would be a great fall-off. I just think Newt's, there's nothing there. I think he's ginned up this whole big thing.
Barney Frank, right there. Eleanor Cliff, who would you rather run if you were Rance Priebus, chairman of the Republican Party?
Oh, I think they'd much rather run with Mitt Romney because he has broader appeal among independents. He is seen as Mr. Economy, and if you see this as a referendum on the economy, I think Mitt Romney would be much better positioned. But there was a piece in the Washington Post today which, first of all, it's always dangerous part of any political party to get too confident about who might run, and Ronald Reagan is the classic example. The Carter people thought Howard Baker, Tennessee senator and Senate leader, would be the strong candidate. No one would ever vote for the aging movie actor with the orange hair, and look what happened. So you never want to underestimate the opposition. And the Post makes the argument that Gingrich has been courting the Hispanic community for years. He has a Spanish language aspect to his website, and that he has taken, as he puts it, the more humane position on immigration and kind of forced Mitt Romney to his right on
yes.
that issue. And if you see a winning strategy for Gingrich, it would be to really energize every conservative, even beyond Karl Rove's wildest dreams, and then add a good segment of Hispanics the way George W. Bush was able to do it, and then you could see a path to victory.
Matt Towery, who would you rather run if you were the chairman of the Republican Party against Obama?
Well, I would never be so stupid as to be chairman of the Republican Party because I hate that stuff. But yeah, if you want my total and complete non-biased answer, I think that...
And you're a pollster, right?
Yeah. Newt Gingrich... originally, he does not look like the better candidate. I mean, let's face it, Mitt Romney looks like he came off of a TV serial or something. I mean, he's handsome, he's smart, he's bright. He's also cold. He's also a control freak, and those who know him know that. And Gingrich, on the other hand, used to be cold. He's not anymore. He's a very nice, kind person. I don't know what to have. Sort of like the Grinch who stole Christmas. I don't know where he got his heart, but he got one. So, and he makes some dumb decisions because he has a good heart. I think that if I were running Newt Gingrich, I would be very pleased to run him, given the fact that Gingrich knows more about federal government than Barack Obama does. Period. I mean, Barack Obama served in the Senate for a short period of time. He is the president. I'm not putting him down. I like the man. I think he's a good man. I don't think he knows anywhere near as much about federal government and how to deal with it than Newt Gingrich does.
So you're both saying Newt, warts and all, over Romney from a political perspective. And whenever anybody says Newt, they always say something like warts and all. So here is Gingrich himself speaking here in New York yesterday. He was on Staten Island yesterday about his flaws, or at least about the general concept of being flawed.
All of us are flawed. I think it's important to start with the idea every human being has something that they have to be concerned about. I think, I mean, that's the heart of certainly Christianity, is the belief that only one person was perfect. That was Christ. So in that sense, I've openly admitted that I've had challenges at times in my life.
So, dude, on Staten Island yesterday. And Matt Towery, let me stay with you for a minute on this, because you have known Newt personally and professionally for many years. And you wrote a piece last month called The New Newt,
right,
which was partly about how his relationship to Christianity, specifically a conversion to Catholicism.
Yes.
Changed him. What do you think we should know about that?
Well, I think you should know it's real. It's not a game.
When did he convert?
10 years ago.
Uh-huh.
He converted about the time I did. He is not, it's not a game. He takes it very seriously. He was not particularly overly religious back when I knew him in, let's say, the two decades before. The other thing I'm going to tell you is that, and this is not to blame the wife, but the marriage that he was in, I did not know Jackie. That was his first wife. I didn't know her very well. The kids tell me about that situation, and I know the kids very well, and I'll let them talk and defend their dad on their own. And they love their mom, by the way. The second wife I knew extremely well, and I always try to put it this way. If I ever ran across someone like that who was married to a congressman and doing the things that she was doing, I think I would have jumped out of a building, particularly when she became the speaker's wife. She was not a bad lady in the sense that she was mean or anything like that. But if you think there are moral problems with Newt Gingrich, go meet Marianne Gingrich.
Oh, my goodness. We're talking about Newt Gingrich and his public life, and you're talking about whatever the personality was of his second wife?
Absolutely.
Explain why that is?
Well, I don't think
what's relevant here?
I'll tell you what's relevant. She drove him crazy. Absolutely nuts. They drove each other crazy. And they also, I will say this as well, there was never anything that Newt Gingrich did that was wrong. In anyone's judgment, whatever moral code you have.
People talked about him bringing divorce papers to her cancer hospital bed.
No, that's the first wife.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Okay, second wife. There's nothing that she ever did that was in any way better, sweeter, kinder, more moral than Newt. period.
But this is relevant to Gingrich as a public figure and a convert to Catholicism. How?
Well, okay. You brought it up. You talked about
I asked about his conversion to Catholicism.
Yeah, I know, but we all hear about the baggage. I mean, I think we got into, you know, his problems, did we not?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm answering the problems.
Eleanor, you want to say anything about this?
Well, I knew Marianne, too, and the speaker was very high on her then, and she co-authored a book with him. She was unaccustomed to public life, and I remember she fled a press conference in tears when she was, they were questioned on the finances, the books, and the ethics of it. And I know Newt Gingrich gave an invitation, an interview to the Washington Post, I think it was, putting the odds on his marriage surviving. And I think, if I remember correctly, they were just about 50-50. She would have read that. And you know, not you know, you never know what goes on inside someone else's marriage. And in fairness, Gingrich has not—he really has not been a sort of a moral proselytizer. I mean, he does realize he has his difficulties. And so, what's fascinating is how Mitt Romney must feel about this, because he's the picture of, you know, happy married life. He met his wife at—they were 18. They've been together all these years, this incredible family, and it seems to get him nothing on the campaign trail.
We will wrap this up in just a minute with Eleanor Clift and Matt Towery talking about the Gingrich campaign with one more clip of Newt on Staten Island accepting a Donald Trump debate for later this month. So another New Yorker inserts himself into the ring, not as presidential hopeful, but as moderator this time. We'll talk about that as we conclude our discussion of the Newt Gingrich campaign in a minute. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We're talking for a few more minutes about the rise and fall and rise and fall and rise again. I think that's where we are in the cycle of Newt Gingrich. Gingrich is actually here in New York right now to appear at a number of events. One was a rally on Staten Island yesterday at which he accepted a debate invitation for December 27th from a New Yorker, Donald Trump.
How could you turn down the Donald? I mean, this has nothing to do with whether he's liberal or conservative. It has to do with the sheer entertainment. Think of this as apprentice the presidency, in all seriousness. I mean, Trump is a unique American character. And it, you know, it'd be like if Bill Gates called and said, hi, I'd like to host a debate. The correct answer would be yes. I mean, you wouldn't say, I got to check my calendar.
So Gingrich is the first candidate in on doing a Trump-moderated debate. That led to this question on Meet the Press yesterday, by the way, from NBC's David Gregory to the chairman of the Republican Party.
But do you think it detracts from the seriousness of the debate to have Donald Trump moderating a debate with the presidential candidates?
It's up to the candidates. I mean, I don't make those decisions. What the decisions I make are making sure that we have a functional operation.
You're the
Republican
chairman of the party.
National
you
committee.
Must have an opinion.
Right, but as my personal opinion doesn't matter.
So GOP Chairman Rance Priebus with David Gregory on Meet the Press. Briefly, Matt Towery, former Gingrich campaign manager, what's your answer to David Gregory's question? Does it detract from the seriousness of the presidential debate process in the GOP to have Donald Trump moderate a debate in Iowa?
No, I think it enlivens the whole thing. I mean, does David Gregory think that he's some great moderator?
Well, that's for him to say and
then
for people
to
have opinions.
No. For me to say no. I mean, I'd like to see someone, you know, we get so tied up in these journalists. And the journalists this year, in many instances, have done great jobs. In other instances, they've just been horrible. So let's give somebody who's not a journalist a chance and see what he has to say.
But Donald Trump, Eleanor?
It adds to the circus quality of this whole nominating process. And
but
I think
is that a good thing? Is that a good thing politically for the Republicans? Is it a good thing for democracy?
It'll probably get more ratings. I mean, I don't think you know we're going to injure democracy if Trump is out there. And Huntsman's not going to go. It'll be interesting to see if Romney goes. Then we could really see some fireworks. But it'll probably be the lesser candidates plus Newt. I can't call him a lesser candidate. And may force Romney to kind of rethink his campaign strategy, which has been very sort of above the battle, and he may have to get engaged. So Trump may be onto something. He wouldn't have made as much money as he did in his life without kind of understanding the market value.
He certainly knows how to add to
American politics.
He certainly knows how to add to the circus, as
right.
you put it. But has he endorsed? Do either of you know?
No, he said he will endorse at some point, but he's not there yet.
So one last question.
Sure.
The not Romney frontrunner status has gone sequentially this year, I think I have this right, from Michelle Bachmann to Donald Trump to Rick Perry to Herman Cain and now to Newt Gingrich. Why are we not talking about Rick Santorum? He was a true religious conservative in the Senate and on the Armed Services Committee, so he's got some foreign policy chops. And he has no major scandals that I know of. On paper, Eleanor, it should be him rising to that mid-lead. Why not?
It's the economy, stupid. And I don't know what he may have some perfectly fine economic plans, but they have not gotten much attention. And a lot of Republicans really don't want to talk about social issues. They see it as dragging them down and narrowing their appeal in the country. And Santorum lost his Senate race, I think, by a dozen points. And he can argue it's a different political climate, but I just think I'd be surprised if he made it into the not Mitt competition.
Matt Tarry, do you totally agree? He could be talking about the economy. He's got the same positions as, most of the Republicans as compared to the Democrats.
Well, I think what Eleanor is probably also saying is that he's a little bit quirky. Saturday Night Live doesn't really...
Oh, that's distinguishing from the pack.
Saturday Night Live. I'll agree with you there. But when you are quirky among that pack, you're in real trouble. He simply does not have... in my judgment, the sort of presidential gravitas. He, maybe down the road he could do something. There's some weird things about him. I don't even know. I know the members of the Senate tell me he's a little bit strange. I don't listen to that stuff. I just think he's just not ready for prime time, another SNL deal. And I will say that I find it amazing, I'll end this, that how in the world did I come on with Eleanor Clift and end up with every damn thing she said.
Well, not only that, I was just about to end the segment by saying I knew we booked one guest to be kind of pro-Gingrich and the other to be kind of skeptical. I just didn't know that we would have both our guests switch seats.
Well, I think we're both pro-Gingrich. He has a lot of good qualities. I think we're both skeptical.
Yeah,
we're in agreement.
How would I put it this way, Eleanor? We've both ridden this rodeo many times before.
Exactly. Everybody in Washington has a story about Newt Gingrich. He's the hometown boy.
All right. The Bucking Bronco continues to buck, and now it's Newt Gingrich on it, along with Romney and Eleanor Clift, contributing editor for Newsweek magazine, staple on the McLaughlin Group, Matt Towery, columnist based in Georgia and a pollster and author of Paranoid Nation, the real story of the 2008 fight for the presidency. Thank you both very, very much.
And thank you. Nice talking to you again, Eleanor. Take
okay.
care. Bye-bye.
Brian Lehrer and WNYC coming up next. Two generations of Lapes, Francis Moore and Anna, on being mother and daughter food activists. Stay with us.